Well, I have good news and bad news. The good news is I am the last speaker before dinner and the bar, so that's the good news. The bad news is I said I could speak as long as I wanted because I was last, so I have prepared about 38 slots. No, just kidding. Okay. So improving cow herd efficiency, I thought we'd start out and just say, you know, the skies will never be cloudy again if we can improve feed efficiency in cows. Well, maybe that won't quite be true. Maybe the market will still go up and down and we'll still have a lot of challenges. But I think this is an interesting area, and I think it's interesting that the three speakers on the panel kind of come at it from different angles, yet really from the same angle. And so I'm going to dive right in and talk about, you know, should you select your herd for feed efficiency? Because I think that's a question that some cow-calf producers ask me, should we select for that? And if we want to select for that, which of those traits should we use? Should we use RFI, which is this idea that the animal ate less than they should have eaten for what they weighed and gained? That's a nice way to select downward on maintenance efficiency. There's other EPDs that look at residual average daily gain. The concept being there, these are animals that gain more than they should have given what they ate. So that's selecting more on the growth side. There's feed to gain, the ratio, the conversion. When you talk to a feedlot operator, they say, I want the cattle to convert the best because that's going to be the best cost of gain in the feedlot. Then there's some of us looking at just intake. You know, we just want cattle that eat less, and then we're going to select the ones that grow more. So we already got a lot of EPDs on growth. If you tell me how much they eat, then theoretically I can figure out a profit and loss on that animal and decide whether they would fit into our program or not. So feed intake. Are any of these traits what you want to select for in a cow-calf operation? And I'm going to suggest no, because you don't want a single trait select. Specifically, you don't want a single trait select on these traits in your cow herd, because you got a lot of things going on in that cow herd. And I think if you single trait select these, just like any trait probably, you're going to have the risk that other traits are going to move the wrong direction. And so we've got to think about it sensibly. And what I want to think about is selecting for how those traits, how this efficiency affects profit. And I'm going to define that fairly narrowly. And I think it was interesting that Trey had that in his presentation as well. But I'm going to define it as profit per acre. Because I think one of the mentality shifts that we have to make, if we're going to make our cow-calf operations more efficient, we need to stop thinking about your ranch as being a 1,000-cow ranch or a 100-cow ranch and start thinking about it as having a certain amount of dry matter or acreage, okay? And that's a big mentality shift, but I think we need to get away from thinking about it as a certain number of cows and start asking the question, what's the most efficient way to harvest that forage and what do I want that cow to look like? And we're going to get into some of that math. I put together some mathematics. I apologize for not having it in the handout. I just finished it yesterday and they told me it was too late, so I couldn't get it in the handout, but I will have these slides available if you want them afterwards. But what's cow herd profit per acre? Well, simply, we're just talking about taking the total revenue less the total cost and dividing it by the acreage, right? That's a pretty straightforward thing, and it's pretty straightforward how you improve that, because basically it's going to be driven by your stocking rate, which I'm not going to talk a lot about tonight, but which is really critical. How do you stock that land? And obviously, you've got to determine how aggressively you want to manage that or not. But at the end of the day, that stocking rate will drive a lot of that profit per acre calculation, because obviously it affects the revenue. You want the revenue to go up. You want the cost to go down. If you move those things in that direction, that profitability per acre is going to go up. And I think that's really the goal. But to do that, you've got to know how each of these traits affects both the revenue and the cost and even the stocking rate. If you're not really looking at all those things, then getting your hands around this profit per acre concept becomes pretty difficult. Here are some strategies that we know don't work. Okay, one is selecting for excess growth or milk. And we'll talk about that later on, but cattle that have excessive growth in milk are not real efficient at producing profit per acre. It goes back to Trey's quote, there are cattle that are productive that are not profitable, right? And we got to be careful that we're not selecting for those cattle. And then what if we just chase post-weaning traits? We can have a disastrous effect on what goes on in the ranch. And so we've got to avoid that. What are strategies that can work? Obviously, improving grazing management, crossbreeding to improve herd fertility is really critical, and we'll see some of the effects of that in a partial budget that I'm going to do here in a few minutes. And then finally, this idea that if we had a multi-trait index and it included all those traits that drove revenue and drove cost on your cow-calf operation, that would be a good thing to select for. But when you think about a multi-trait index, be careful. Be careful that all the traits that drive profit are in the equation. If they're not, then you're not going to move in the right direction. In other words, if you're just selecting for growth and milk, where is the cost of that cow in that equation? If that cost is not factored in, you're going to make a disastrous selection decision. And we have to be careful today because EPDs work. They work really well. And indexes work really well. And I tell people it's like having a turbocharged car. You know, the faster the car goes, the more important steering is, right? Because otherwise you end up in the ditch. And that's what can happen with these indexes if they take you in the wrong direction. So I'm going to just walk through some of these factors. The first one's heterosis, and this is a slide prepared by Dr. Larry Cundiff. And the interesting one is annual incomes affected about 23% by using crossbred cows. And you can look down through there, and I won't go into the details of that, but you can't forget that 23%. Anytime you do that partial cow-calf budget where you're looking at number of cows and production per cow, that heterosis effect looms enormous in the calculus, okay? You just take a set of straight bred cows in your environment, calculate what they're producing, and tack on 23%, and it radically changes your profitability, okay? Radically changes it. So you've got to think about that. Lifetime production goes up. The fertility goes up. The number of calves per lifetime goes up. The survival rate of the calves goes up. Every way you look at it, it increases the efficiency of that cow-calf operation. The second thing is cow size. We talk a lot about cow size. This is a great chart that was developed by some guys, Dr. Shane Gadberry down in Arkansas back in 2008. And basically what that chart says is as cow size goes up, that line that's coming down through the middle of it says that the percentage of that cow's weight that she weans goes down. And the slope of that line says that for every 100 pounds you increase cow size, that cow's going to wean 2.5% less of her body weight. Now, when you factor that out, big cows still wean bigger calves. Don't make that mistake. But they wean a smaller percentage of their body weight. And the factor's by about 2.5% for every 100 pounds. And we'll put that into our calculus as we get towards the end of this. But basically, That's the math to remember there. Smaller cows wean smaller calves, but they wean a higher percentage of their body weight. Now, what about feed intake? It was interesting. Doug put up a slide, and he said that wasn't a lot of variation in that slide. And yet in his slide, he had some that were eating, I think, Doug, it was just under 30 pounds of dry matter, and some eating almost 55, right? So almost a spread of 1 to 2 in how much they were eating. I'm going to show you these two bulls, and we use this a lot because these bulls were extreme in their production. They were both born, not more than about 15 miles from here and raised there, and they were weaned the same day, and they were put on the same ration. They were put in bunks and fed the same ration, and we measured how much they ate and how much they gained. They weighed up both about 1,230 pounds at yearling time, but here's the shocker. One of those bulls was eating 17 pounds of dry matter a day, and one was eating 42, gaining about the same. That's a difference of almost 9,000 pounds, or just a little over 9,000 pounds in a year. Now, think about that. That trait, we think, is 30 to 40% heritable, as Doug said. That trait, intake, is going to get passed on to the sons that go into the feedlot, and it's also going to get passed on to the cows that go into your herd. Okay? So what if the bull with the lower intake's daughters are just about as productive as the daughters of the bull with the high intake, and they eat that much less? What does that do to profitability on your operation? This is something we've never, ever really looked at, right? We've never sat down and tried to pencil out those ramifications. And so I'm going to do that for you today. But in round figures, well, let me talk about the conversion first. The bull on the left is actually the good converter. He converted 4 to 1. The bull on the right converted 10 to 1. But the interesting thing is if you multiply out those differences in intake at a 40% heritability and think about the bull's daughters weighing the same but eating that much different, you could stock 112 daughters of the low intake bull on the same amount of feed as 75 daughters of the high intake bull. Now, those bulls are extreme. They're as far apart as you're going to find bulls in our genetic analysis. But obviously, the herd with 112 cows is going to produce way more production per acre than the 75 cows. Okay? And so I want you to be thinking about this idea that if we can change the intake level in our cows, we can change the stocking rate, and we can maybe do so without radically changing the productivity per cow, and then we run more cows and we generate more production per acre. Okay, that's basically the walkthrough on the math. Now, this is some data from Clay Center that just confirms this. What they did is they fed two sets of cows two different ways. The cows along the horizontal bar were all fed to try to make them gain about the same amount of weight per day. And look at how much range they had to feed them in energy. The cows at the low end were eating half the daily energy intake of the cows at the high end. So there's this huge variation that exists in cows of how much you have to feed them to make them gain a certain amount of weight. Then the vertical bar shows a whole bunch of cows that were all fed basically the same amount of energy per day, and they had radically different response to that quantity of energy. Some of the cows were losing a lot of weight per day. Some of the cows were maintaining their weight. All fed the same thing. So just further evidence that in these cows, there are huge differences in intake and requirement and what they do with that feed. And so that's an opportunity to us. So I'm going to walk you through a comparison of what I'm going to call a typical straight-bred, large, average intake cow, okay? And then I'm going to compare that to a hybrid cow that's 100 pounds smaller and has lower intake. Okay, so I'm taking kind of just an average middle of the road and comparing it to what I'm going to say is best case scenario. Because best case scenario, we make that cow just a tick smaller so she's a little more efficient. We find her selected out of genetics that eat lower intake so she eats less feed per day, even for her weight. And then we stock more of those cows and they're hybrid cows and we get a little more production from that. How does all that factor down to profitability? And I'm assuming basically 1 million pounds of dry matter. So that's what I'm starting with. Okay, you got a ranch, you got 1 million pounds of dry matter. I don't care if that's 50 acres or 500 acres. It's that much dry matter. How are you going to graze it? We're going to start out and compare two sets of cows, one that weigh 1,400 and another set of cows that weigh 1,300 pounds. Now, cattle eat relative to their, we think, okay, or this is the standard theory, relative to their metabolic weight, okay? And that, without getting into the clumsiness of that calculus, basically that bull that was eating 17 pounds a day, he was eating 8% of his metabolic weight on a daily basis. That bull that was eating 47, he was eating over 20% of his metabolic weight in feed per day. Okay? Now, to just maintain themselves, on average, that 1,400-pound cow is probably going to have to eat about 25 pounds of dry matter a day. If we take that 1,300-pound cow and she's efficient and we can get her on just 9.9% on a dry matter basis because genetically we've selected her that way, it turns out that she'll eat 21 pounds of dry matter. So we've basically, by changing the cow size and by changing the intake EPD or genetics of that cow, we've reduced that intake by 4 pounds of dry matter a day. Now, all I did then is say, okay, based on that amount of dry matter per day, how many cows could I run on that 1 million pounds of dry matter? And the difference is 109 cows compared to 128. Okay, all I did was take the total feed and divide it by the dry matter per day times a year's worth of grazing or eating. Okay, then the next thing is, what percentage of their weaning weight are they going to wean? I assume that 1,400-pound cow is going to wean 40%. Because of that math, the 100-pound lighter cow is going to wean 2.5% more, so she's going to wean 42.5%. So that says 560 pounds versus 553. Now, I could have put in that heterosis, but I thought if I did that, that would That would really confuse you on those weaning weights. But odds are that crossbred cow is going to have more weaning weight. The figures suggest probably about somewhere between 8 and 12% more weaning weight. So she's going to actually do even better than that. But I left that out. Okay, so this is a very conservative projection. I did figure that we'd have a higher percent pound or higher percent weaned per cow exposed in the crossbred herd than in the straightbred herd. I put the crossbred herd in at 85% and the straightbred herd at 80%. That came down to pounds weaned per cow exposed of 448 for the 1,400 pound cow herd and 470 for the smaller cows. So suddenly we got a big advantage for that smaller crossbred cow in terms of pounds weaned per cow exposed. Plus we have more cows. Look at what happens to the total pounds produced on that same feed resource. There's a huge difference there. Okay. Now let's go through the economics of that. But the net of that said that the herd with a greater number of smaller, lower intake hybrid cows weaned significantly more total pounds on the same feed resource. Okay, I think that's a significant take-home message. You can go home and figure this out and do your own calculus, put in your own numbers on costs, but it's going to come out in favor of that direction. Now, what about what happens from a financial standpoint? I took those pounds, I multiplied them by $2 a pound. You can argue whether that's high or low, but it's an easy number to do the math, which I liked. Came up with those total revenue. Then I said those 1,400-pound cows are going to cost us $500 a year in feed. And we're going to run that other herd on that same amount of feed. So feed cost was the same for both herds. I put in a variable cost of $150 per cow. You can argue whether that's too high or too low, but I wanted to be on the high side so that when we stock more of those smaller cows, we're going to pay for that variable cost of running them. That's why their costs are higher. And then I also took the replacement rates, and I said we're going to replace. Remember, when the inventory goes up, on that more smaller cows, that means we've got to keep more replacements as well. But I did adjust that for hybrid vigor, which said that straightbred herd, those cows are probably going to wean 6 calves. Those hybrid cows are probably going to wean 6.6 calves. And so I took that $1,000 depreciation cost, or whatever you want to call it, divided it by 6 on the straightbreds, divided it by 6.6 on the crossbreds, then multiplied it by the number that we had to run and put that in as a depreciation cost. Came up with total cost a little higher in that herd with more cows, which is what you'd expect. But when you look at the profit, look what happened to the profitability. We dropped $19,000 and some dollars down. In those 109 straightbred cows, we dropped 37,000 down in those smaller hybrid cows that were lower on intake. We almost doubled our profitability. We changed our profitability per cow by about 50%. We changed our profitability per acre by almost 100%. Almost double. So there's a huge effect here if we can moderate those cows. This is radically different than how we've thought about selecting cows in the past. Because what we've done in the past is we've made the cow bigger and higher feed intake. If you look at all the genetic trends in all the major breeds, when they print genetic trend on dry matter intake, it's one of the fastest upward trends they have in their breed. And so we are selecting cattle that eat more. And yet this analysis suggests that we should be selecting for cows that eat less so we can stock more heavily. It's a radical change in how we need to think about cow efficiency. Okay, what do those low-intake cattle look like? These are two bulls that we've identified in our system that are in the bottom 1% on feed intake. Okay, you might be thinking low-intake cattle are not the kind of cattle I want to raise. You can walk by those bulls as you leave the building. They're standing outside. You can see if that's the type of cattle you want to raise. They're pretty acceptable, okay? But they do, from proven data on their progeny, have animals that have gone through those grow-safe systems and eat less than 99% of the other cattle that we raise. And they do it pretty interestingly. So that's where it's at. Can you do it in commercial conditions? Here's a rancher in Craig, Colorado, running 1,200-pound cows. We bring those cows down to the front range. We winter them here. We feed them a 75% corn stock, 25% distiller's ration on an as-fed basis. We feed them 15 pounds of dry matter a day, and they will gain between 100 and 200 pounds over the winter. So they can do it with very little feed. really backs up the confinement discussion that was had earlier today. Those steers come into the feedlot. They wean at over 600 pounds. They come in and convert at 5.1 to 1, and they feed out to 1,425 pounds finished weight. So we can put all that together and keep that moderate cow, still hit our targets, still be efficient in the feedlot, and reduce the amount of feed that has to go into those cows. And with that, I think, am I right on time? Because that's the end. Thank you very much. We'll see you at the bull session.